The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
A time to weep. A time to laugh. A time to mourn. A time to dance. The worst ever mass shooting in Texas occurred just before noon yesterday. Evil in the form of a gunman invaded the modest worship service at the First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs, Texas, murdered 26 people. Their ages were anywhere from 5 to 72. This is 10% of this town. Horrific, unimaginable. A time to weep and a time to mourn. Unfortunately, we live in America 2017, and the political tribes and the instant media, and there's not going to be a proper period of mourning before the clamor starts for the laws to prevent this from ever happening again. In fact, the clamor has already started. The reality that you probably won't hear in those debates is this was not a winnable fight. You can't legislate the human heart. No amount of freedom or restriction can keep this from happening. That's not a fatalistic view. For some reason, it's just the way the world is that we find ourselves in. Evil definitely exists. But so does good. And they are constantly at war, and they have been forever. The battle is just heating up. There aren't any easy answers here. Just about anything anyone says after a tragedy like this sounds trite and inadequate. Sometimes there is only a time to mourn. If you were blessed to wake up this morning, you have a choice. We all do. How do we choose to live after we hear about 26 strangers murdered in South Texas? Will you choose to let it change your perspective? Will you look at this and begin to believe that everything in life is evil, or will you choose to see the good? Will you choose to live with a renewed purpose and diligence? Will you help someone in your life? Will you serve your community? Will you love your family more than you have? Or will you just choose to ignore this tragedy, watch it as some political thing, and move on, just some faraway news story that doesn't have any real bearing on your life? That would be a terrible mistake. Between what happened in Las Vegas and then last week what happened in New York and now Texas, if we aren't shaken to the core by the reality that things are changing and life is precious and short, and that we need to live it well, and that what we do in our own life makes a difference, and we better hold our kids close and teach them the things that we used to find self-evident. If we don't do that, then perhaps nothing will wake us up. The truth is, whatever you choose, you're either going to step out into an angry, cynical, bitter world today, or you're going to step out into a world where you are not alone. That there are more good people than bad people. And you're surrounded by people that want to stand up. They're just looking for the opportunity. That's the choice you have to make. And whichever one you choose will become your reality. Choose wisely.
It's Monday, November 6th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
We are honored to have the governor of the great state of Texas, Greg Abbott, with us. Hello, Governor. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm doing good. Obviously, I'm torn by what happened yesterday. I was in Sutherland Springs and had the opportunity to visit with family members of the victims, as well as the people in the community. Remember, this community is so small. It is just several hundred people large. And I don't think there was anybody in the community who didn't know and who wasn't familiar with the victims. But, you know, following up on what you just said, I got to tell you, there was a lot of mourning that was taking place. There was enormous sadness and grieving. But in having the opportunity to speak with family members of the victims in the community center there in Sutherland Springs, I left there on the way to the candlelight vigil being very inspired by the way people responded. You know, you just challenged your audience moments ago to figure out how they are going to respond to this. And if your listeners respond the same way that the family members of the victims responded, it will be one with strength and resolve, but one that is devoted to their faith in God. The key focal point the entire evening was that God is great, God is good, and that God provides the strength that we all need to make it through these enormous challenges like this. This is a very strong faith-based community, and you could see in a palpable way the power of that faith all night long last night. And I am so inspired and so impressed by the people of Sutherland Springs, their friends, their neighbors, and their family members. It will take time to heal, but I think the quickest, surest way to healing is by relying upon God to guide you through those challenges. And that seems to be the pathway that is being chosen by the people of Sutherland Springs.
So, Governor Abbott, I know there's an investigation going on, and you don't want to get in the way of any of that. But you said you met with the victims' families. Did you get a chance to meet, or do you know anything about the family of the killer? How are they doing?
No, they were not there, and I have not visited with them, and don't have any factual information about how they are doing. It's fair to say that they probably are in shock that something like this happened. But it's also some of the facts that are coming out that Devin Kelly was challenged in various ways before this took place. And we don't know what the family members knew, how long they knew it. And so these are all different types of pieces of information that will come out in the coming days.
I'm struck by this small town the way I was. I don't really know if you remember when the Amish had a guy come in and shoot their school and killed a lot of their children. And the Amish went and showed forgiveness to the family of the killer. And it was striking. The difference, the way they handled things to the way the rest of the world handles things. And this seems like the same kind of community. Was this a family that was that lived in this community and that knew everyone?
Yeah, this was a very small community of just several hundred people, about 10% of which were in church.
Jeez.
day when the shooting took place, but everybody knew everybody. And so this is devastating, but the response in multiple events that I was at last night was one where there was a single word that people focused on, and that word was love, and that is the necessity of love overcoming evil. This was a sheer act of evil. There's one cure for evil, and that is the type of love that God provides.
Is it true that he was in the Air Force and not dishonorably discharged, but discharged for bad behavior, convicted of domestic violence, and denied a license to carry? Are those things true?
All of those things are true.
So is there anything that you can think of that maybe should change, that would have slowed this down, just what you know on the surface, that could have stopped it or slowed this down?
Well, obviously, you can look at it in several different ways. One is that, you know, this was... The shooter, Devin Kelly, was a person who had mental challenges that long predated the shooting. They were evident in part during his time, during his service in the Air Force, and maybe at times before that. And there were signs of it after that. And so there perhaps was a need to be able to respond to those mental challenges in ways that would de-escalate something like this from occurring.
We understand that his ex-wife occasionally attended this church. Is that a possible motive? Do you know?
I believe, based upon the information I have, that I will not go into great detail about right now, but that I am aware that his mother-in-law, Devin Kelly's mother-in-law, attended this church. I don't have it for a confirmed fact that his wife attend this church, or his former wife attend this church. But I do believe this was not a random act of violence. Instead, I believe we will see in the coming days that this location was a specific target by Devin Kelly, that this was planned out for reasons we don't yet know in full detail, but we'll soon be able to piece together. But I do think we need to give law enforcement, who have been working around the clock, some more time to be able to piece together all the multiple pieces of this puzzle. But I think when they do conclude that investigation, it will be clear that this was not a random act of violence.
Do you know enough to be able to say it wasn't politically motivated? It probably wasn't religiously motivated, but it was probably personally motivated?
Obviously, I don't have all the information to conclusively say that. Based upon what I have heard, I think it was personally motivated. But understand this, and that is, even if someone is personally motivated to commit a crime like this, no one commits a crime like this without having mental challenges.
My son asked me last night, he said, "Dad, it wasn't like this when you were growing up, was it?" And I said, "No." And he said, "What's happening to us?" What's your answer?
Well, I would go back to the earliest pages of the Bible and go through the history of the Bible and know that many years ago, there were acts of evil that took place, and that multiple parts of the Bible remind people that evil must be overcome with good, and that God is the pathway to that good. And so we, as a people, we as a world, need to recognize this evil. You know, we have seen some catastrophic events over the past few months, whether it be the terrorist in New York City driving a truck down a bike lane, or whether it be the shooting that took place in Nevada. But go back less than a century ago with the horrific actions of Hitler. Go back centuries before that with even more heinous acts taking place, where there were more numerous random acts of killing people. Unfortunately, killing has been an event that's taken place throughout the history of mankind. And so there's this constant battle between evil and good. And my one takeaway from the people of Sutherland Springs last night was their commitment and their focus was on the good that God can provide.
Governor, thank you so much. And we're proud to have you as our governor. You are, as I've said to you before, the best governor. I've lived in many states, and you're the best governor I've ever ever had over our state, over a state that I lived in. And I am grateful for that. Thank you so much, Governor.
Thank you. God bless.
By the way, if you would like to help out the community, we'll give you more information on this. Mercury One is setting up a fund for this community. It's not a rich community by any stretch of the imagination. And a lot of people were affected. 10% of this town was affected. And you can give at mercuryone.org.
Also coming up today, next hour, we have Ken Paxton, who's the Attorney General of Texas, going to give us a little bit more information. And coming up in just a few minutes, we have an eyewitness to the actual attacks we're going to be talking to.
Your mortgage rate depends on many factors like the global economy, the loan that you choose, how many points you pay. Other variables can add costs, and they are the property type, whether or not it's your primary home. This is all the more reason it is in your best interest as a home buyer to seek a mortgage pre-approval and guidance before making an offer on a home. Plus, if you're a veteran and you haven't used your VA benefits with interest rates this low, now is the time to get into a new home or to refinance. A great way to get started is by taking just a second and going online to AmericanFinancing.net or calling one of the salary-based mortgage experts at American Financing at 800-906-2440. That's 800-906-2440 or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
We have a whole program slated for you tonight at 5 o'clock on the Blaze TV. We take to the chalkboard with the stats and statistics and all of the arguments that you need that you're going to hear today. You're going to hear all of the something's got to be done. We have to get more gun safety. Nobody needs a gun like that. There needs to be more regulation, et cetera, et cetera. You're going to hear all of that. And we're going to give you exactly the way to answer that on today's program and in a very concentrated way today at 5 o'clock on the Blaze TV. You don't want to miss today's episode all about gun control and this particular shooting. And showing you the what people are saying and then taking it apart. We have an eyewitness that is going to be joining us here in a second. And they apparently talked to the press yesterday and have stopped talking to the press. They're not interested anymore because they were a little disgusted and felt that the whole thing was just being done for ratings. They have agreed to come on to this program. This is the last program they're going to be doing. But they agreed to come on because they felt they know this audience and they felt this audience could actually help the town. It's a member of this community. And within 15 minutes, we will have the link up at mercuryone.org. If you would like to donate, what we'd like to do is set up some funds to help the families that are going to be struggling, help the, you know, people, even if it means helping pay for the funeral expenses for those who who, you know, can't afford that. We'll do whatever we can to help that that town as we all come together. And you can go to mercury1.org to make a donation. $5 will make all the difference in the world as well. We have a conversation with somebody who was there and saw it all unfold and heard it first. Next.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Sutherland Springs is a very small town, a very Christian community, middle to low income community that people live for generations there. It's not a place that is in the news, especially for a mass shooting. Yesterday morning, Carrie Matula was at work. She works at a gas station. She's a cashier. She was not too far away from the First Baptist Church when a coworker came in and said, "Something's going on outside." Carrie joins us now. Hi, Carrie.
Hello, Mr. Beck. How are you?
Good. How are you?
A little shaken and still kind of, everything's still surreal, you know? It's hard to digest all of the loss that's coming into light, the names and the victims and things, and it's just devastating. Devastating.
So, Carrie, tell us what happened yesterday to you. You just started your shift, right?
That's correct. I got to work about 11 o'clock, and my coworker was finishing up outside so that she could leave, and she said, "Somebody's shooting outside." And that's not unusual. We are kind of in the country, but it is kind of city limits, you know. But we recognize that the fire was rapid fire. It wasn't, you know, paused fire. It was rapid fire. And it went on for about, I'm going to say about 35 seconds or more. It was very fast. All of this happened so fast. And by the time we recognized what it was already done. And for a while.
Go ahead.
Shooting.
I'm sorry, we missed that. Your phone dropped out. What did you say?
I said, at first, we didn't realize it was even a shooting that had taken place. We thought somebody was target practicing. And when we started seeing the first response, fire department, ambulance with Air Life, that's when we recognized that something terrible had happened very quickly. And everything started to go on a downward spiral from there. And as more information kept coming out, you know, it's just more and more devastation, more bad news, more, you know, people worried about their loved ones and such. And it was just terrible. It was a terrible day.
So, Carrie, about 10% of the community was involved in this and don't mean to be harsh here, but was either killed yesterday or badly injured. So yes. A community like this, you know everybody.
Yes. Either by name or by face or, you know, through a working relationship or a business. I mean, it's and there are church connections as well, which are very deep here. You know, everybody knows everybody. And it's one of those small towns where, you know, there's really not many secrets out there. You know, if there's somebody's in trouble, we help them. You know, this community has come to my family's aid personally many times over the last 5 or 6 years. You know, just simple stuff like either, you know, food or support or prayer. I mean, this is a praying community, and we always are lifting up everybody in prayer out here. And to have this happen to such a close-knit church community, it's just terrible. We're just shaken by this. But at the same time, we've also rallied together. And as you saw through the news media reports, you know, the photographs and whatnot, you know, this is a tight community, and we're all going to be there for each other through this and for the next coming weeks and months. And the next few days are just going to be crucial. And, you know, again, any prayers and support that anybody could give is greatly appreciated and welcomed.
We're setting up a fund at mercuryone.org. It should be up by now. If you go there and you want to donate, just to be able to help out, you know, if somebody can't afford the funeral expense or whatever we can do. Can you tell us about any of the families that, I mean, how many have lost their fathers? Can you tell us about any of the victims?
Well, in order for family privacy's sake and out of respect for the victims' families right now, I don't really want to speak on that.
That's fine.
Because not all the information is accurate at this point.
Okay.
We do know that there's been a devastation in many families. They've lost their mothers and children. You know, I had the privilege of going home and hugging my kids last night, and there's people that are not going to be able to do that ever again. And it's just really humbling to see that and to know that. And, you know, it just really makes me sad for everybody out here.
Carrie, did you know the shooter's family at all? Is this a family that is connected to the community, or is it a family that is? Can you tell me anything about
them? If somebody knows him, I don't know that. From what I understand, this is an outsider that came into our community who hated organized religion. I mean, this is just what I'm getting off the media, because everybody really knows what this guy's motive was. But he was not part of our community. Nobody really knew him that I know of at this point. And, you know, it's just crazy. It's just crazy. He just came from another county, another city, drove all the way over here in tactical gear and with intent to do this. And, you know, he wasn't going to let anybody stop him. Apparently one of the neighbors across the street from the church came out with his own rifle and tried to stop him. And he continued and took off. And it's just, it's mind boggling. There's no rhyme or reason for it.
Carrie, our thoughts and prayers are with you and with the families and everybody involved in this tragedy and your whole community. And we thank you so much for talking to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Beck. You'll have a blessed day.
You too. Carrie Matula, a witness at the church shooting. We happen to know the pastor of the church. He is a member of the Black Robe Regiment. If you've been listening to this program for a long time, you know what that is. A wall builder's guy and a good friend of David Barton. And he lost his daughter yesterday in the shooting. So there is no one in this town that isn't affected by this. And if you would like to get involved and help this out and be part of the light, Mercury One is giving you an opportunity to do that at mercuryone.org today, mercuryone.org. Mark your donation for Texas shooting, and we'll make sure that the town and the families get that in and the church in any way that might help them. The right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It is stunning to me that it hasn't been more infringed already. But how many more of these before people say enough is enough? We have to do something. Today at 5 o'clock, only on the Blaze TV, we take those arguments and we take them apart and we give you the arguments, not for your friends that agree, but for your friends who don't agree. We also are going to begin the program with something Stu's pretty passionate about. I didn't see these, thank goodness, but the people who said, stop with your prayers.
Oh, yeah. Lots of people. That's the big leftist response now from the media and from Hollywood is, hey, if your prayers work so well, you wouldn't have died in a church. which is a really, it's a really nice way of handling your life. If you're one of these people, I hope you're really proud of yourself. It's a really, it's an incredible attribute that I'm sure you can brag to your children about.
Where does God promise that he's going to keep his flock safe from all of the evils of the world?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you were talking about back in the day, Greg Abbott was talking about the early days of the Bible. That was a really violent period.
I mean, it was
not a fun place to live. There was a lot of violence from man to man. It was almost impossible to stay alive past like 30 years old. It was not a good time. In fact, 100% of people ever born will die. Yeah, it's incredible.
No, not the Christians.
Well, no. Yeah, all the Christians have died.
No, not the praying Christians.
Millions and millions
of
Christians.
No, not the ones that go to church pray.
You can pray a lot and you're still going to wind up dying. That's not the promise of prayer.
Didn't know that.
Which is a stunning development, apparently, to a lot of people in Hollywood who think, that is not what prayer is supposed to do. I know you're going to go into this tonight on the TV show, blaze.com/TV, because it's really upsetting. And these people are trying to take advantage of a tragedy like this and take some sort of political joy on their Twitter feeds out of it. And what a weird thing that is. You want to talk? I mean, it certainly is a weird thing for people to go into a church and start shooting people up. But violence of man versus man has been around a long time. This idea that you're going to take joy out of watching 26 people die to prove yourself right on some religious or political point, I don't know. I mean, maybe that's not new, but it's despicable. It is completely despicable. And it was all over the place. It makes you just want to unplug completely. And I don't think it's right to have people like this you off of social media or whatever.
There's no difference between those people and the quote religious people of the Westboro Baptist Church that go and mock people who are grieving. I mean, you know, all of the left supposedly hates those religious people and put all religious people into that category. And now they've become that. I mean, you're mocking grieving people. How do you do that? How do you live with yourself? We'll take on the actual argument about prayer tonight at 5 o'clock. You don't want to miss it. If you want to protect your home this holiday season, listen up. You have early access to SimpliSafe's biggest Black Friday sale ever. It's $200 off SimpliSafe's holiday security system. This is their bestseller, 13-piece arsenal that covers your entire home. If you want to protect your family, this is how you do it. SimpliSafe has made everything about home security effortless, simple. You barely lift a finger. You order online. It is delivered right to your door with free shipping. It takes less than an hour to set up. A 10-year-old can do it. I know because my 10-year-old helped. SimpliSafe has no long-term contracts, no pushy sales guys, no hidden fees. The prices are honest and fair, and it's $15 a month for the best in-industry 24/7 alarm monitoring. And with SimpliSafe, you're never locked in. This is something that you should have for your home. It's also something that is affordable, and you could give it to your children for their home if they're old enough for Christmas. Don't miss the chance to save $200 during the SimpliSafe special pre-holiday sale. Visit SimpliSafeBeck.com and check it out. Go now before it disappears on November 13th. That's SimpliSafeBeck.com. Amazing $200 off the home security system. SimpliSafeBeck.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
So let's go political here for just a second. And on Trump's trip over to Japan, there's a quote that's going around from Donald Trump, and everybody's saying he doesn't even know that we build cars here in America. He doesn't know that Japanese are already building plants and building their cars, because he said, try building your cars in the United States instead of shipping them over. Is that possible to ask? I mean, that's not rude. Is that rude? I don't think so. And now people are quoting and saying, look, he doesn't even know. He's asking Japan to build the cars in the U.S. It already does. Well, may I point out, for everybody who hates the mainstream media, the Washington Post has just run a story debunking that. What it says is, this is complete, I'm quoting the Washington Post, this is completely unfair to Trump. A look at this Fuller remark makes clear that he does know the Japanese cars are built in the United States. He even talked about it at length and praised the manufacturers for the amount of jobs they've created here. Look at his quote in the full text. When you Trump, when you want to build your auto plants, you'll have approvals almost immediately. When you want to expand your plants, you'll have approvals almost immediately. And in the room, we have a couple of the great folks from two of the biggest auto companies in the world that are building new plants and doing expansions of other plants. And you know who you are. And I just want to thank you very much. I want to thank you. I also want to recognize the business leaders in the room whose confidence in the United States, they've been creating jobs. You have such confidence in the United States, and you've been creating jobs for our country for a long, long time. Several Japanese automobile firms have already really been doing a great job, and we love it when you build cars. You're a Japanese firm building cars. We love it. Try building your cars in the United States instead of shipping them over. Is that possible to ask? I mean, it's. I don't think it's rude. Is that rude? If you could build them, I must say, Toyota and Mazda, where are you? Are you here? Anybody? Toyota? Mazda? I thought so. Oh, I thought that was you. That's big stuff. Congratulations. Come on, let me shake your hand. They're going to invest $1.6 billion in building new manufacturing plants, which will create as many as 4,000 new jobs in the United States. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so he was being taken completely out of context in that remark. And good for the Washington Post for catching it, right? I mean, it was all over social media as this really dumb Trump moment. And instead, it's very broken text. It's hard to, obviously, as you read it, it's sort of hard to work your way through it because he's talking to a live room. He's stopping and he's addressing individuals in the crowd and he's doing his Trump thing. But the bottom line is he's mentioning several times that they do make their cars in the United States and
he's
the
asking
jobs
for more plants.
Right. He's asking for more.
He's asking for more plants. And I think the news is one, that there is a source that those who are spreading this lie, it's not the Blaze. It's not Breitbart. It's the Washington Post. So use the Washington Post to debunk that. But also, you should be aware to thank the Washington Post for doing what journalists should do.
Glenn Beck. Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
We live in perilous times, and even more perilous if you happen to be a Republican and in Congress or in the Senate. We know now Republican congressmen, senators can't play baseball out in the open, but now apparently it's dangerous for them to mow their own lawns. Senator Rand Paul, Friday, cutting his own grass when somebody came and tackled him from behind. He has suffered 5 broken ribs, cuts on his nose and mouth, and bruised lungs. Now, we don't know what started this attack. It's possible it was triggered by the, Paul family's use of bright-colored garden gnomes, or maybe he was playing music too loud in the neighborhood. Maybe it was a combination of the loud music and annoying garden gnomes. But whatever the case, the neighbor snapped. So what is it that we know about the neighbor? Well, we know that he's a registered Democrat. Okay, there's lots of those in Kentucky. He hates President Trump. Okay. And he follows postings by Occupy Democrats and their social media accounts. How do we know this? Well, surprise, surprise, just like the man who attacked the congressional baseball practice, he's very active on Facebook, and his page is full of anti-Trump and anti-Republican ramblings. He even posted an Occupy Democrat Noam Chomsky meme calling the Republican Party, quote, the most dangerous organization in world history. Well, if you really believe that, wouldn't you think that you would have to take them out? Not all are like this, but why are so many on the left these days so angry and so willing to resort to violence? All of the talk of the past several months has been on the danger posed by the violent right. But we are seeing a real rise in the violent left that harkens back to the late 1960s and early 1970s. Yesterday, Weather Underground and Students for a Democratic Society, they are today's Antifa, and all the other radical left groups, they took to the streets. On Saturday, the left-wing group Refuse Fascism kicked off demonstrations in nearly two dozen cities. Their demand is the removal of President Trump and Vice President Pence. They claim to continue protesting in the streets until that happens. Although the turnout was low, the action sounds eerily similar to the days of rage in 1969. John Jacobs, the leader in both the SDS, Students for Democratic Society, and the Weather Underground, stood on the rubble of a police statue they had just bombed in 69 and compared their protest to the fight against fascism in World War II. Does that sound familiar? The Weather Underground turned into a full-on domestic terror group. In 1970, police found in one of their hideouts 57 sticks of dynamite and four completed bombs. In 75, they bombed the headquarters of the U.S. State Department in Washington, D.C. The question we should be asking ourselves is the radical left going in this same direction? The answer is clear. They're using the same rhetoric. They're following the same playbook as they have before. The violent left is evolving and growing. People are getting more and more angry. Even in small suburban neighborhoods where the local celebrity is a politician in Washington who still mows his own lawn there in Kentucky.
It's Monday, November 6th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So there is something, and I'm not sure we have an answer on what it is. There is something going on with Saudi Arabia and Iran. And this could be very, very bad. This weekend, on Saturday, the Lebanese prime minister resigned abruptly. Now, he did so in Saudi Arabia. He left Lebanon, the prime minister, and resigned in another country. And he said he did it because he feared for his own life, because Iran has gained way too much power in the region and was really in charge now of Lebanon. Meanwhile, the Houthi rebels, which are Iranian, they fired a ballistic missile at the Saudi capital. The Saudi defenses shot it down, but that's an act of war. But the Saudis themselves were a little busy this weekend. Last week, at the end of last week, Donald Trump was talking about Aramco, which is the Saudi national oil company. This used to be, if I'm not mistaken, this used to be a joint venture between the United States and the Saudis. And then it was nationalized and they took all the money. And remember, this is what keeps them afloat. All that oil money goes right to the citizens. Well, last week, Donald Trump said, "We want Aramco, please, King of Saudi Arabia, we would like you to sell 10% of that. And sell it through the New York Stock Exchange, not through the London Exchange." The King of Saudi Arabia said yes. Then the very next day, he went in and he started firing people at Aramco, saying that there was corruption there. But there's much more to this story, and it becomes Jason Bourne quickly. And Jason Batrill has been following this for me. Hi, Jason.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
Lots of research going on this weekend.
Wow.
Lots of emails back and forth to each other.
Yeah, this was like I was watching all this go down, and I thought that I was actually watching like Game of Thrones Saudi Arabia edition. Yeah. or something like that, because that's exactly what it feels like.
And it feels to me like it's the whole region, that this is, when this settles, this is region changing.
Right. And I'm so, maybe we're just nerds here or something like that, and this is just very interesting to us, but apparently not, because a lot of people were asking me on social media, like, why is no one covering this? Because this is an amazing development. It really is. I mean, we are witnessing a fundamental change of the Middle East. We really are. We're in the middle of it. And the two primary actors are Saudi Arabia and Iran, just like they have been for centuries in that area.
Now, Saudi Arabia has been the one that has been holding Iran back, and that's why we have done everything we can not to piss Saudi Arabia off. Even though we disagree with them, we don't like them, they are the ones that have been holding Iran back. They are now talking about getting nuclear weapons because Iran is, you know, pursuing nuclear weapons. Israel is doing the largest ever war gaming in the Middle East. They started that, I think, on Saturday. And so there's this massive war game going on at the same time. So he went in, is it the new crown prince, or is it still daddy?
I think it's both. The daddy is setting up the new crown prince.
Okay, so for the very first time, the king of Saudi, who is the head of the House of Saud, as in Saudi Arabia, the House of Saud has a whole bunch of brothers. As you can imagine, there's lots of family, and everybody is a crown prince. Usually it goes to who? There's a system that when a king dies, who is it supposed to go to?
So there was the main head honcho, Mr. Saud himself. Mm-hmm. And he had, of course, a ton of kids. And then, so the second generation, the third generation, I think we're now in the third generation. But they're all incredibly old now. But they were all sons of, you know, tracing, you know, back to the main guy. And they get together, they're all crown princes, and they get together and they basically vote. They say, we want this guy now to take the throne. So that guy can't necessarily just have his son, you know, and just take, you know, the lineage off in another direction, and then it just becomes... So it's an absolute monarchy, but they vote on who the absolute monarch will be. It's not just passed from son to son to son that. Now, this is the first time I can think has ever happened where there is an actual revolt within the king, within the monarch family to where they're saying, no, forget that. We're going this direction. If you got a problem with it... Well, I'm just going to create an anti-corruption group that's going to just get rid of all the people that I don't like. That's essentially exactly what they did. So Daddy Salman had his son, the head of this group. Now, he's also the head of the military, most of the economic stuff. It's interesting when you put it in light to the things you need to do to pull off a coup, which is essentially what is going on right now within the Saud family. What you need to do is what they call the M&Ms. You might have heard this on movies and stuff, but you need to control the military. Boom. This crown prince now controls him. You need to control the money. Boom. He controls that with Aramco, which you talked about, and all the other economic stuff. And you need to control the media. Now, it's also interesting that the state media went down over the weekend for a little bit, probably because they didn't want people talking about some of this stuff, because there was some even weirder stuff going on.
Yes.
When a crown prince was out observing certain projects, his helicopter went down. We still don't know why his helicopter went down. He's dead.
Yeah. And like 12 people were dead on this helicopter. And there was some other, you know, like a finance minister or somebody big was also on this helicopter. And it looks as though the crown prince, who is the one that daddy chose to be the new king, is just killing all these people.
There's another crown prince, a second one, I think yesterday, that died. So there's two crown princes have died in the past 24 hours. He died in a gunfight somewhere in Saudi Arabia. So we've got two crown princes, multiple that are now held up in this harsh, harsh prison in Saudi Arabia called the Ritz-Carlton. And if you want to go to jail in Saudi Arabia, you know, and you know, you're a part of the monarchy, you want it to be in Saudi Arabia because they treat you pretty well. But so all of this stuff is going down. They're having an internal war, but it's interesting to note on what, so why does this mean anything to us? You know, why do we care? Because for one, Saudi Arabia is in the midst of turmoil and war with Iran at a time when the economy is already on the brink all over the world.
There is no reason why Aramco would sell 10% of a sovereign You know, this is a sovereign company. They took it from the market, and Saudi Arabia owns 100%. Why would you sell 10% of it? Because you're cash shy. That's why.
Yeah.
That's a really bad thing for the stability of Saudi Arabia.
And if you look on, it's interesting what happened in Lebanon. So that prime minister, he stepped down because of how Iran is basically taking control via Hezbollah. Now, that's interesting to happen. If you look back in history when Hezbollah first came to be, it was the same exact thing what's happening in Iraq right now. There was just a bunch of Shia militias. Iran went in, put them under the umbrella that he would later call Hezbollah. And now they basically pretty much run the country. They're more powerful than the Lebanese military is. Now, the same thing is happening in Iraq right now. There's a bunch of Shia militias, which you've been heard are probably they're attacking Kurdistan right now. And Iran went in and put them under an umbrella that they call the PMU now. It's the same thing as like in Hezbollah. Iran controls them. Iran funds them. So just like Iran controls Lebanon, they're now just about to control Iraq. And they are also moving to do the same thing in Syria. So Iran is winning this war. Now you see what Saudi Arabia is facing right now. They're doing drastic measures right now, which amount to basically a coup internally so they can get control and they can battle Iran. That's what you're about to see in the Middle East in the very near future.
And the new king of Saudi Arabia, he's a reformer.
Yeah.
And that's one of the guys that he's killing all the guys who are like, no, women can't drive.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. That not only includes the monarchy, but that's included clerics, imams, people like that, businessmen like what's that guy's name?
The crown prince.
Al-Waleed.
Yeah. Prince Al-Waleed.
Yeah. Owns like Twitter and or like big stake in Twitter.
Prince Al-Waleed owns 10%. He was arrested this weekend. He owns 10% of Fox. We've had a run-in with Prince Al-Waleed. I have it on good authority. Prince Al-Waleed was one of the guys that saved one of our big banks during 2008. We went kowtowing and saying, we need money, and he gave it to us.
Wow.
So he owns a lot. And for Prince Al-Waleed to be arrested, he's got powerful friends here in the United States. That's interesting. Yeah. And dangerous.
And it makes sense, too, because this new crown prince is a reformer. He wants to get all the young people on his side because the monarchy's old. So he's trying to show the young people in the country that, hey, look, we're not
smart.
And no one is safe. Look, even Al-Waleed's not safe. You know, I snatched him up. That's what he's trying to do. Everyone's not safe. We're changing our ways.
How do you think this ends, Jason?
I think it ends in more conflict in the Middle East.
I was going to go with really well. That was my. I was going to be my summary.
The answer is one word: Armageddon. Thanks, Jason. Appreciate it. So, is the world becoming more safe? Is the world becoming less unstable or more unstable? I mean, with everything that is happening in the world, Stu and I were just talking. How long is the Second Amendment going to stand? How long is that going to stand? And then how long will the First Amendment stand? I mean, we have people now saying that we need to limit speech. We have people now that, you know, after these two shootings, how long?
Yeah, I mean, there's always this idea that the NRA is somehow able to influence all.
It's 4 million members,
right? And it's also just not that much money. Honestly, they get a lot more money from other groups,
unions.
Unions give way more money to Democrats, among other groups. I mean, they're not even. It's not even close. It's a bizarre thing. In some ways, I'm actually surprised that Republicans have stood as long as they have for the Second Amendment. In that. Generally speaking, they have pushed back most, opportunities to, I don't know, let me think of the way to phrase this, infringe on people's rights to bear arms. They've pretty much stood on that, which is kind of surprising considering how many other things they've folded on over the years. And they've folded on plenty of things that they've had a lot of money given to them from. I mean, the NRA money argument is really stupid. Frankly, it's everywhere on social media, but it's a very stupid argument. And I think at some point, there are going to be enough Republicans who just think, you know what, Just give them what they want.
Yeah.
It's not going to, they all know it's not going to change anything. It's not going to prevent a crime like this. No. It's never going to prevent a crime like this. But like at some point, it feels like they're not going to want to fight anymore for this because there's a political cost to it. And of course, that's how they're calculating a lot of this stuff. I'm surprised they've lasted as long as they have. And you have to continue to fight these things. The best argument for these, to push back on these sensible gun control restrictions that they always come with is, it really is the idea that if you're not fighting back against every one of these, they will take more and more and more and more and more. They will go, they don't want sensible gun control. They want all of the guns.
So is it getting more stable or less stable? What is happening to the world? I do not buy gold as an investment. Never have. And people who say, gold hasn't gone up. Yeah, you were the ones that said gold would crash at $300. It hasn't, has it? And it is odd that it hasn't gone up. Why hasn't it gone up? Because of the central banks and the government. They know that if gold skyrockets, that sends everyone into panic. So forget about it as an investment. Will it be a good investment? I think it will be, but what do I know? That's not why I buy it. I buy it as a hedge against insanity. Because when the world goes broke, and it's going to, when the world goes broke, they always go back to gold. I have Bitcoin. Why not Bitcoin? Well, because if Bitcoin doesn't work, I lose all my money. If gold doesn't work, I have gold. It's still traded everywhere in ancient times and in future times. It will be traded. It's gold. Right now, gold is offering free gift cards and qualified purchases and 1 year of free storage on IRA purchases. They'll also give you a free American flag lapel pin just to learn more. So call right now. Read their important risk information and find out if buying gold or silver is right for you. Call 1-866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Want to see if we can talk to Dana Lash today or Wayne LaPierre from the NRA, because I think the NRA is going to need to up their game because I think the attacks are going to start coming fast and furious, if you will. Pun intended. And they could use your support today at 5 o'clock. I'm going to do a special kind of tutorial, a self-defense 101, if you will, and how to defend the First Amendment and the arguments that you're hearing coming out now and that will continue. We're going to give you a 101. A lot of it is based on the book Control, Exposing the Truth About Guns. It was a number one New York Times bestseller a couple of years ago. It's my book. It's paperback. Every home should have it. You need to read it as it will give you all of the arguments. The name of the book is Control.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Senator Dick Durbin. The shooter turned his gun on people, kids, in a place of worship. America is in the grips of gun violent crisis. Congress must act. Richard Blumenthal. Horror, heartbreak, shame. Prayers are important but insufficient. After another unspeakable tragedy, Congress must act or be complicit. Are the bodies of the Vegas massacre cold enough for you yet, or is it still too soon to discuss gun control? Should we start talking about gun control? Texas State Attorney General Ken Paxton is with us. Hey, Ken, how are you, sir?
Well, it's obviously a very tough day for Texans.
It is. Were you there last night at the vigil with the governor? Did you have a chance to make it or not?
No, I was not. I'm actually on my way to Beaumont to visit with some people down there, but staying in touch.
The tragedy last night, what can you tell us about the shooter and what law enforcement knows?
Well, right now, I mean, obviously they're continuing their investigation. We've got it really state is really sort of leading this investigation. A ton of local did it. Small group of people. You only have a small sheriff's office. So I think you got the Texas Rangers and DPS involved in that. And you also have FBI and ATF stepping in sort of to aid them. So, I mean, there's not a lot that we know. The guy killed himself or was shot by somebody, so he's deceased. So it takes a little longer to find out what's going on when the guy that you're investigating is dead.
Where was he from, Ken? Was he from this community or outside? Because I've heard both.
No, I don't think he was from the community. Everything that I've heard is he was from New Braunfels, which is about 40 miles away from this little community, which is about 30 miles southeast of San Antonio.
So, Ken, we are obviously going to start having the argument on gun control. Can you help us steer us through this? What was there anything that you know of that could have been done?
So there's a question outstanding that they're still trying to determine as to whether gun laws were already violated. So it's very likely he violated gun laws, given that he had the issue in the military and he was not supposed to be. My understanding, he was not supposed to be able to purchase a gun anyway. Second of all, he obviously committed murder, which is clearly a crime in the state of Texas and everywhere else. So my argument is this: does adding another gun law stop somebody that's willing to kill people? And my answer is, I don't see why it would matter to them if they're willing to kill somebody. Another gun law is not going to change that. So what's the solution? To me, the solution is prevention, having people there that can stop it, either people that are trained to do that or having your own congregation prepared to react.
Is there any doubt in your mind, Ken, that if the guy who came across the street after hearing the shots, the private citizen, wouldn't have pulled his gun and started shooting, that this would have been a lot worse?
Absolutely. And I think it's interesting that these people that are claiming that we need some gun law to prevent this, they can't point to any gun law that would actually make any sense at all. But what you can do is point to what actually happened, which is these two guys that actually stepped in and potentially saved, you know, the rest of the lives in that building. Because in my opinion, that the gunman was going to kill everybody. That was his goal. He went there with a plan.
We were listening to the audio this morning of the two guys that, you know, one had a gun and shot him, which caused him to stop, run, get into his car and drive away. And then he climbed into the truck with another guy, and they went on a high-speed chase. The shooter lost control of his car and plowed into a tree. In any other state, I am convinced there would be litigation against those guys for chasing him and causing a wrongful death or something like that. Is the state of Texas of the mind that these guys did absolutely the right thing?
I have heard nobody say that they didn't. I think they would be lauded as heroes for really risking their own lives to save other people's lives. They are the perfect example of good Samaritans who put their lives on the line to save other people.
Are you at all depressed by the reaction that happens after these incidents? I mean, because the incident is obviously bad enough, Ken, but when you get to the point of people who are saying, who are mocking those who are, you know, praying for the victims, who are saying the prayers were not enough, obviously, they're inside a church. I mean, really what we see after these things is really despicable, isn't it?
It's pretty sad when you're saying prayers are not enough. I mean, that's exactly what we should be doing at this time. We should be praying for the victims' families. We should be praying for those who were injured. No one understands the will of God completely, but we do know that God is good and that there is a reason that we pray.
Ken, I asked the governor of this, and I'd like to hear your answer. It's a question my son asked last night. He said, "Dad, this didn't happen when you were a kid." And I said, "No, it didn't." And he said, "What's happened to us? What's changed?" What's your answer, Ken?
You know, I don't know if it seems like in so many ways our society is coarsened and the culture has changed. It's not as civil. It's not as good. It's not as faith driven. It's been corrupted from inside out, and I think the evidence of it is things just like this. Not like things like this never happened, but they certainly didn't happen to the same extent. And to blame it on like guns, to me, that's ridiculous. Blaming it on the coarsening of the culture and the change in people's hearts, that's what causes this type of thing to happen.
What do you say about the possibility that this is serious mental illness in this particular case?
I mean, who knows? I mean, I don't know. It's certainly possible. But I also know that, you know, people like this exist in society that they're just evil people. They're just really evil. I don't know which one it is here, whether this guy just had some mental problem, or to me it seems likely that he's just evil, that he plotted this out. The reason I say, a lot of times when people are just crazy, they don't go in and methodically kill that many people. They'll kill some, but they're not that disciplined. This guy had an agenda. I don't know if it was political or personal, but it certainly seemed like he knew what he was doing.
There's a strange sort of a disagreement going on as we talk about these things, and that some people talk about these things, whether it's mental illness or just people being more violent or angry, and that it feels that way. It feels that things are getting worse. And certainly there have been more sort of public mass shootings in recent years. But the numbers, and you know these, Ken, from 1993 to 2015, the rate of violent crime per 1,000 persons declined from 79.8 to 18.6. Over the same period, rates for crimes using guns dropped from 7.3 per 1,000 to 1.1 per 1,000. The homicide rate is down from 7.4 to 4.9. We're going completely in the right way, in the right direction when it comes to actually stopping people from dying in a general sense when it comes to violent crime. But these big sort of marquee incidents where one person decides to take out as many as possible seems to be on the rise. Is that an effect of just maybe the way the media is covering it, the way it's something that's changed culturally? Do you have any idea what that could be?
Well, I mean, one is, you know, I think the media coverage, these people obviously seeking it out. I think that's part of it. They're driven to it. And especially if they have a political agenda or a religious agenda, it's a way to get attention for their cause. I think that's part of it. And I also think with technology improving, you know, it improves for the good guys and it improves for the people of evil as well. And it makes it easier as technology makes it easier for bad people to do more things. I think we likely see more of it, just like you could have North Korea with one bad little country because of technology. Now they can do a whole lot more damage than they could 20 years ago.
I read in the Vegas shooting just this weekend that police in the Vegas shooting say now that they think the motive might have been a desire for fame. To be the best or the biggest shooting in American history, which I found extraordinarily disturbing. And I think would explain the numbers with Stu, that it's people just wanting to be famous, to be, you know, in a world where where being famous is a goal. It's a very dangerous place to be.
Sure. Look at the reality TV world. People doing virtually nothing and being on TV and becoming famous and making lots of money. I think it's another sort of indication of where our culture's at.
Ken, we really appreciate your time. We know you're busy. Thank you for dropping in and just spending a couple of minutes with it. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Keep Texas in your prayers.
You got it.
What you outlined there at the end, Glenn, is sort of my working thesis on this and what I'm really fascinated about these mass shootings.
By the way, that was Ken Paxton, Attorney General of the great state of Texas.
Yeah, it's we are seeing a real decline in the amount of gun deaths and homicides and violent crimes. And let's just say in another world, those things were skyrocketing right now. Mm-hmm. You might have an argument. You still don't have an argument against the Second Amendment, but you might have an argument that we should tighten guns somehow. You might have that argument. But in a society in which these things are falling by 60, 70, 80%, it makes no sense to blame the gun. What we have here...
Especially when gun rates, violence with guns going down, mm-hmm. as Stu said, over 50%. Gun violence going down. But gun ownership going through the roof.
Going through the roof. So it makes no sense to crack down on guns and these things. But is there something that we can do? And I put this on just generally speaking, the media to start, but also I think it's everybody, because there's a salacious desire for it in not publicizing these things the way we do.
We haven't used the name of the shooter once.
We haven't. And I think that's a good first step. Mm-hmm. And I think just not lionizing them and canonizing them into this big competition, because that's what it feels like. It's what Vegas felt like, really, mm-hmm. Is a guy who said, you know what? I saw what they did in Columbine. I saw what they did over here. I saw what they did over here. But these people didn't think about being in an elevated position and waiting until there's 20,000 people in an area. They all went into a school where they're all in different rooms. And it seems like a person who thought and tried to figure out a way to take out the largest number possible so that he could set a record, as weird as that sounds.
It's a game. It's a high game. High score wins.
Yeah. And the publicity around these people, how they turn into essentially heroes to each other in their own little communities. Dylan Roof was like this, where he looked at the other killers and compared himself to those before he wound up committing the crimes. You wonder if how much of that, it doesn't fuel people being bad. There's always going to be bad people. There's always going to be evil people. But this type of incident, which is the only type of incident right now that's really increasing, seems to be driven by that. And I wonder what we can do as the media in trying to stop that activity from making these people known who they are. How can we pull back on that? Because I really do think that is a motivating factor for these idiots.
6.3 per capita firearm murder victims. 6.3 in the United States in 1994. And there were 194 million guns in the country. The per capita murder victim rate now is 3.2. So it's in half. Mm-hmm. Guns have gone from 192 million to 310 million.
And that's as of a couple of years ago.
That was 2009. That was 2009. And there are many more than that.
And you may have remembered that Barack Obama was the greatest spokesman for the NRA and guns that has ever existed, because everyone thought he was going to come take them. And he tried to several times in various different ways. But I mean, that number is way higher now. You know, gun sales, I guess, have dropped off a little bit since Trump became president. But it's still one of those things where we all know that that's an important right to defend. And you see, every one of these incidents winds up being another excuse for people to try to come and take some part of your right to bear arms, which, again, if you might remember, shall not be infringed. It's pretty clear. It's not like you can, like, oh, what if we take half of them away? Shall not be infringed. Infringe is a pretty strong way of stating that. They were pretty clear about not wanting that to happen.
Let me tell you about Tanya. Tanya and I have been married for years and years and years. She grew up in the Northeast. She grew up in Connecticut. And this time of year is tough for her because she misses the colors. I miss the color of the trees. I don't miss the raking. I don't miss any of that.
When's the last time you raked? 1975?
Were you impressed by Rand Paul mowing his own lawn?
Yeah.
Good for him, senator mowing his own lawn. Okay, so anyway, Pro Flowers has the perfect gift for my wife or anybody who is a lover of the fall. Long-lasting bouquet of the favorite fall colors. Their best-selling cinnamon cider roses are a great option for a birthday, an anniversary, or just because they miss the colors of fall. They also have 100 autumn blooms or a dozen autumn roses available at proflowers.com. Can't lose. No matter what bouquet you choose, you'll receive 20% off any ProFlowers unique bouquet of $29 or more. ProFlower, the bouquets are guaranteed to stay fresh for at least 7 days or your money back, and you control the delivery date. ProFlowers gives you more bloom for your buck, big, beautiful flowers, more stems for your money, and long-lasting freshness. Get 20% off all of the bouquets of $29 or more. Go to proflowers.com. Use the promo code Glenn at checkout. That's proflowers.com, promo code Glenn.
Glenn Beck.
Mm-hmm.
Beck.
So who thought about taking a gun to church from here on out?
Crossed my mind. I definitely thought about what the procedures are at my church for security.
Mm-hmm.
We do have security at the church that I go to. But still, I mean, it made me think, maybe I'll add on to that a little bit. It does seem like it's a target.
I have security with me when I go to church. And I want to tell you about an incident where you want to talk about a congregation that gets it. I want to share a story where we had an incident at church. Coming up.
Glenn Beck.
Just looking ahead at the menu from Blue Apron, including cheesy broccoli baked pasta, seared steak with garlic butter, oven fries and romaine salad, roasted chicken and fall vegetables with cranberry ginger compote. All sorts of delicious stuff that is always being made with Blue Apron. And one of the things I like about Blue Apron, if you don't know what it is, they send you a box of incredible ingredients to your house. And you can make all these recipes from really easy to follow recipes within like 45 minutes. And they're delicious gourmet meals. One of the things I like about it is it's a lot of ingredients you wouldn't normally use. I feel like I had like two or three things I make normally. And Blue Apron really expands what you can do with that. And it's great because you can customize it. If you eat a certain way, if you have dietary restrictions, if you have just certain foods you like and don't like, you can pick and choose what you use there. Check out this week's menu and you get $30 off your first meal with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/stew. blueapron.com/stew. It's Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
You know, good comedy is really hard to pull off. Larry David proved it on Saturday night over the weekend because he didn't pull it off. His opening monologue fell completely flat, which is weird because Larry David has become a professional comedian in one form or another for decades. And he can be really, really funny. But, you know, live stand up is hard. And he went places that not everybody would go. He started his monologue struggling through jokes about the homeless, blind people, ugly people, sexual predators. A few laughs here and there, a lot of dead air. It was awkward, but that's Larry David. He's an awkward guy. Surely it could only go up from those topics, right? Now, he ended the skit talking about how he would have hit on women even if he had been in a concentration camp during the Holocaust. Listen.
I've always been obsessed with women, and I've often wondered if I'd grown up in Poland when Hitler came to power and was sent to a concentration camp, would I still be checking out women in the camp? I think I would, you know? Hey, Shlomo, look at that one over there by Barrett Say. Oh my God, is she gorgeous? Oh! Oh, I've had my eye on her for weeks. Yeah, I'd like to go up and say something to her. Of course, the problem is there are no good opening lines in a concentration camp. How's it going? They treating you okay? You know, if we ever get out of here, I'd love to take you out for some latkes. You like latkes? What'd I say? Is it me or is it the whole thing? It's because I'm bald, isn't it?
Now, I have to be honest with you. First of all, I mean, you have one of the biggest comedy stages in the country. It's not like you need to reach for the Holocaust joke to fill time. But I have to tell you, this is Larry David. This is Larry David.
It's what he does.
It's what he does. This is Seinfeld. If Seinfeld wasn't this all the time, the uncomfortable, ugliest thing you could possibly say, the thing that changed television with Seinfeld was that Seinfeld was a show about people you wouldn't like. you wouldn't want to hang out with. There was nobody on the show that was truly happy. They were all miserable, with an exception of maybe Kramer. And he was just crazy. Everyone else was unlikable. Well, Seinfeld was Larry David. Seinfeld's George. That's the real guy. You don't think George would have said that in the 1990s? Do you know who Colonel Klink was on Hogan's Heroes? Werner Klemper. Look him up. See his family history. Take a minute and Google him. He became Colonel Klink? Making fun of a concentration camp? Werner Klemperer? Huh. Look, I don't, I mean, he's a professional comedian with, you know, decades of material to draw on. A week of Washington political news, you know, could probably do that without breaking a sweat. He's cranky. He's willing to say the non-PC joke. I don't know. I don't get going for the Holocaust thing, especially in the year that America is having. But if you don't like it, turn it off.
It's Monday, November 6th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So anybody else think yesterday, maybe I should bring a gun and start carrying a gun to church? I do carry a gun in church, and I have armed security, and several members of my church carry guns. I mean, we live in Texas, and, you know, maybe my particular church is a little different because we're there, and so at some point people have thought about security. But I will tell you that we had somebody come from out of state at one point, and we've had this happen several times, and it doesn't end well. We have had people, you know, try to come and talk to me at church or whatever. And it was one of the, we have what's called fast and testimony meeting, and you can just get up and talk. And so I walked up and I was going to share my testimony one day. And this guy walked up at the same time, and he got there first. So, he was, speaking, and I didn't even really look up. I was kind of lost in my own thought and prayer. And when I opened my eyes during his talk, I noticed that my security guard was now sitting with my family, which is unusual. He usually doesn't. And he had moved up and was sitting right next to my family. And then I noticed a couple of other gentlemen get up and change seats. And I looked at my security agent, and he gave me the look like, we're leaving now. And I started paying attention and looking around and listening to what this guy was saying. And he was speaking directly to my family. And it was really creepy. And he was wearing a big, long jacket. And what I found out later was the other people in the church, the people who carry guns, they had moved in position the minute they started to hear him talk. They had moved into position as well in case he got out of hand. And one person who carries a gun moved into the pew directly behind him. So when he sat back, if there was a problem, somebody else was there and our guy was there. But when he came back, that he was sitting right behind him in the pew. And I only tell you this story. This happened, I don't know, a couple of years ago. And I only tell you this story because nothing was going to happen that day. As it turns out, I confuse him. One of the guys who did this went to jail. This guy, I'm not sure if he was the guy who went to jail or for something else. I don't remember what happened to this guy in particular. But nothing happened. And nothing would have happened because the people here in Texas and the people that I go to church with, they're not going to let it happen. And, you know, if somebody would have been in the church yesterday, in the church with a gun, it may have ended sooner. But it did end yesterday because a civilian had a gun. Earlier this morning on CNN, What's his name, Stu? Chris Cuomo. Chris Cuomo was talking to an eyewitness, and this is what he said about after the eyewitness starts talking. He says this about the gunman. Listen.
You know, and our neighbor, in my opinion, and from what I saw and what I know about the neighbor of 30 years, he stopped this. This would have been a lot worse.
I don't know how you could look at it any other way. I mean, you know, he, by all accounts of people who've seen what happened, and by his own to law enforcement, from what we're told, the murderer came back outside for some reason, and that's when they engaged. And the reporting is that the gunman wound up dropping his weapon, got in the vehicle to flee, and then other people saw him fleeing and chased him down until he eventually went off the road, and they don't know if he died from being hit by them or taking himself out. But if not for your neighbor, who knows what would have happened?
A neighbor with a gun. Let me go here, too. I said this to Ken Paxton, the attorney general of the state of Texas, just a few minutes ago, that I really thought that in any other state, if people would have gotten into their guns, if they would have shot him, they immediately, that person probably would be in jail other than in Texas. If somebody would have come up, can you imagine this in New York? I mean, I don't mean even New York City. I just mean New York, the state of New York, or Connecticut. If somebody had their concealed carry permit and somebody was shooting, do you think Connecticut would be looking at that person who shot him as a hero?
I'd like to think so, but how many times have we seen stories like that?
Let me ask you this. They get into a truck and they start following him, and they're at a high rate of speed, and it's 90 miles an hour, and he crashes into a tree. Do you think that the police are heralding them as heroes? Or do you think they would say, this was ridiculous, they let him on a high-speed chase, people could have been killed, all of the bad things that could have and would have happened?
I like to think he's certainly an individual policeman would see him as a hero, but still...
Yeah, the society wouldn't have.
Yeah, you'd see afterwards there'd be lawsuits, there'd be people saying you shouldn't be... It's vigilante justice.
Mm-hmm.
You'd see people push back against the person who actually tried to stop the situation.
So if there is somebody that could do vigilante justice and had a reason to do vigilante justice, it's our good friend Marcus Luttrell. And Marcus called me right after his dog was killed here in Texas. Some punk kid came and shot his dog, and his dog meant everything to him. His dog got him through a lot of the trouble from, you know, his PTSD. And he got into the car and he started chasing this guy. There wasn't vigilante justice at the end of this. This is the way Texans do things. They are the first responder. Listen to this 911 call with Marcus Luttrell in a high speed chase.
What's the location of your emergency?
Yeah, I'm on thrill of chasing these guys down and just shot my dog.
Okay, what? Why are you what? Chasing him? So you chasing him because he shot your dog?
I do, yeah. That's right.
Do you know who these people are?
I have no idea. We're coming over the railroad tracks right now.
Is that crossing the railroad tracks?
Yeah.
What is your name?
Marcus Luttrell. Now, you better get somebody out here because they got a gun and I got one too, so this could turn into a gunfight. We're going about 110 miles an hour now.
Okay, well, I don't want you to drive 110 miles an hour because you've...
I'm not letting these guys go. They just murdered my dog.
I'll pass the bill.
I'm still on the same road.
Have you passed the Valero?
No, we haven't passed the Valero yet.
I don't want you to hurt yourself by wrecking or anything.
I'm not
going to
hurt myself. I'm like, hey, listen, man, I'm a Navy SEAL. I have been for 10 years. I'm not worried about hurting myself. I know what I'm doing.
Sir, stay on the phone with me, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He held him and waited for the police to arrive. Guys with guns sometimes do some really great things. If you're hiring, you know that quality hires keep your business moving forward, but you also know it can take a lot of time to find the right candidate for a job. And with ZipRecruiter, you can post your job over 100 different web sites, including the leading job boards, with a single click. So you can rest easy knowing that your job is going to be on the places where everybody's looking. Plus, ZipRecruiter puts their smart matching technology to work, and they go out and they notify anybody who would be a qualified candidate about your job posting within minutes of you posting. So they're not waiting for them to see you. They go out and look. This is why 80% of the employers who post ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in the first day. ZipRecruiter's smartest way to hire. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes, from Fortune 100 companies to companies like mine. Right now, you can post your job for free on ZipRecruiter. Free. ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Beck.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Hello, America. 26 people killed, 20 injured in a mass shooting here in Texas. This is a town. 10% of the town is involved in this. 10%. We don't know how these people are even going to pay for the funeral. Some of these families, tell the story. Don't use the names, Stu. Tell the story of the woman whose dad was speaking at the church. Listen to this.
Her father was a guest speaker at church that day. If you heard, the pastor was not actually there. He was a guest speaker at the church. The daughter was running late. She lost her father, her mother, her sister-in-law, who was pregnant, and 5 nieces and nephews.
Oh, my gosh.
On the same day. And this is just one of the families, obviously, who was affected by this.
How is she going to deal with just the funeral?
We'll tweet a GoFundMe page so we can at least help in whatever way that we can.
Yeah, and we are we're raising money also at mercuryone.org to help these this community. They have multiple needs, and if you want to make sure that, you know, every dollar is going to the community, you can go to mercuryone.org and click on the front page slider there that will be all about Texas, and it'll take you to that page, mercuryone.org.
One of the weird details that's come out of this, and these things change constantly, but that the shooter engaged with this guy. This guy came out with his own rifle and engaged with him, and there was some sort of shootout, and the guy dropped his gun and then got in his car and ran away, and it sounded strange, like a guy with this sort of hardware would be dropping his gun because someone else pulled a gun on him. Well, the reports now are that he actually did hit him. He shot him in a gap in his body armor, and he was he's a plumber that lives down the street, and actually got his own rifle, shot him through a gap in his body armor, which made him get into his car. He drove away. We don't know if it was because of the
effects. Do we know how far away he was? Like, was he at the church front door and the guy was in the street? Or, I mean, because if he is at the front door of that church, it's pretty close to the street. And if you have a rifle and you're good with it, that's an easy shot. That's an easy shot to make.
I don't know. In the gap of the body armor, you're aiming if you for know very what small.
You're, I guess
area.
If you know what you're, if you know what you're doing,
and maybe this guy did, yeah.
But you know, if you could see the, I mean, obviously, I don't know what the body armor looked like, but if you could see the body armor, I mean, he's lucky to aim for his head with a rifle. And if you're just a few yards away, a rifle, you could shoot him in the head.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if he doesn't know you're there. You're not being shot back at.
And over again, we've heard, oh, well, there's never been anybody who's a good guy's never stopped a mass shooting. Of course,
all the time.
First of all, they don't turn into mass shootings if they get stopped. So that's, but this one had already begun. This guy came after a lot of damage had been done, but still dozens of lives were saved by this guy. Well, he had no military background.
Let's remind you that there are still 10 people in critical condition.
Yeah.
Four in serious.
They do think they're going to pull through. So that's, they don't think the death toll is going to go up. I mean, but you never know with these things, obviously. And then not only did he shoot the guy, but then got into a truck and chased him down the road at high speeds. Eventually, this guy crashed. We don't know if that's because he lost control of the vehicle or if he just, you know, effects from being shot, and then he eventually shot himself in the car.
Think of this, too. Can you imagine if you were in any other state? You were in Connecticut, and there was a shooting at a church, and you saw a guy come across the street and shoot another man with a gun, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then you approached another civilian that didn't know you. And they were driving a truck, and you got into their truck. You threw two of your guns in there and said, go chase him.
Follow that car, essentially.
They're in most states, no way. No way.
Yeah.
In I'll bet you in almost every city, no way.
You think you're getting carjacked, probably.
Yeah. In Texas, you're like, yes, sir, we're going.
Let's go. I mean, I you know, you love that spirit. And, you know, you hate that this stuff happens. But, again, you can find those small bright spots and
good guys stop this. Average citizens were the first responders.
Glenn Beck. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
We welcome to the program Pat Gray from Pat Gray Unleashed, which is a program that follows this one on most of this network.
Mm-hmm. Indeed it does.
Pat is a huge fan and supporter of Chris Cuomo, as we all know.
Huge.
Big time on the on the Cuomo bandwagon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's pretty amazing that he actually admitted that somebody with a gun stopped this. It's hard to look
audio,
at it
please?
Any other way, right?
Let's play that audio again. It's pretty amazing from Chris Cuomo.
You know, and our neighbor, in my opinion, and from what I saw and what I know about the neighbor of 30 years, he stopped this. This would have been a lot worse.
I don't know how you could look at it any other way. I mean, you know, he by all accounts of people who've seen what happened, and by his own to law enforcement, from what we're told, the murderer came back outside for some reason, and that's when they engaged. And the reporting is that the gunman wound up dropping his weapon, got in the vehicle to flee, and then other people saw him fleeing and chased him down until he eventually went off the road, and they don't know if he died from being hit by them or taking himself out. But if not for your neighbor, who knows what would have happened?
I contend if that happened in New York, not New York City, in New York, Chris Cuomo would be saying a different thing. Yeah, how irresponsible it was. Who is
because
this guy with a gun?
No, I mean,
police and they let him on a high speed chase. How many people could have been killed?
Mm-hmm.
All of that.
I don't know. I mean, I give him credit here. I think
I do. I mean, I give him credit for
agreeing
with reality. He did it again though in the same show. This is Chris Cuomo. He's talking about the definition of terrorism. And when he first started saying this, I was like, oh gosh, this is going to be a moment. But actually, he was kind of just throwing a softball to explain to his audience the truth. Listen to this.
One of the things that winds up being prickly here is how we define it. People will say, well, when the brown guy did it in New York City, it's terror. But when the white guy does it, it's not. People misunderstand, I think, the contextual relationship between the word terrorism and investigations. I've asked you this before. I'm asking you again now. What does it take for something to be terror to investigators?
Pretty straightforward. If he's motivated by a political motivation, that is, he's protesting, for example, U.S. engagement in Iraq or Syria, he's protesting racial issues in the United States, which is political, that goes into terrorism. If he's simply angry because of something that's happened in his life, maybe similar to what we saw in Las Vegas, that's not terror. That's simple violence, and that's insanity. I'm guessing in this case we're going to find that he, as the president has suggested, had some mental health issues. That doesn't necessarily take me to terror.
I mean, people, I think, confuse who does it with why they do it, and you guys are focused on why it's done and how you can make that manifest in terms of agenda.
Pretty reasonable.
What happened to Chris Cuomo?
Who is this guy, and what has he done with Chris Cuomo?
I don't know.
I'm really concerned.
I don't know if that's the standard way of handling this story today and all the
it is. Sure. Over at MSNBC, that's not how they're handling it. On the morning cup of Postum with Joe and his main squeeze, they had a completely different take. Somebody, I don't know, some girl named something Jordan. I forget her first name.
River.
No, it's not the River Jordan.
Last name is Jordan?
Last name Jordan.
Oh, Michael.
Yeah. River Jordan.
It's not Michael Jordan. It's a female type sounding. Now, not to be stereotypical.
Excuse me. The new Star Trek, Michael, is a female name to, quote, show the gender fluidity of the future, end quote.
And that's, I'm all about that, but that's not the name.
So it's Michael Jordan.
That's not the name.
That's not the name.
It's Michael Jordan.
Oh, was it the person who's on staff who's been removed because of multiple rape accusations?
No, it is not. It's not that Jordan either. Okay. No, but she says, now, I'm a huge Second Amendment supporter. Mm-hmm. And you know what comes after anybody qualifies it. But I'm really not, because she said the issue isn't, the solution isn't that somebody should have had a loaded gun in their purse at a church. I just can't believe we're going to go there. Well, why not? That would have ended it maybe after the first shot. Mm. Why is that? And then Joe agreed with that, because you can't have a gun in Jesus's house.
He did not say it that
he
way.
Did. Yes, he did.
In Jesus' house.
Well, I can't believe that's the answer.
So, guns.
The Prince of Peace's house. No. When have you ever described a church in that way? Only during this story.
Of course. Right.
In Jesus' house.
You guys have to understand that Jesus could not have seen guns coming. He had no idea.
No idea.
When he was on earth, they didn't have them.
No.
And he could have seen that they were coming.
And you know what? And guns have really done no good for Jesus. I mean, yes, it stopped the Holocaust. But other than that, tell me what goods guns have ever done for Jesus.
Yeah. None.
You know, none.
No good.
No good at all.
In Jesus' house, Jesus would like to protect
his
people. Innocent.
Yeah.
He allows you the ability to defend yourself. God gives each of us this innate desire to live.
They act as a
desire to defend ourselves.
They act as though if people brought guns to church, there'd be a shootout every weekend.
Right.
I got news for you.
It just doesn't work that way.
Pat, we've gone to the same church for a long time.
Yeah. How many shootouts have there been?
How many shootouts have we had?
Because guess what? There's several people in our congregation who have guns.
Guns, yes.
Several.
Yeah.
And you know what? I will bet you there are some people who, well, they probably don't listen to this show, but there's some people we go to church with would probably not like the fact that there are people with guns.
I think that's definitely true. Yeah.
They would be like, oh my gosh, you don't know who has a gun.
Right.
That's the point.
Because they're not shooting it at the teacher when they disagree with him or her. They're not doing it.
Wait. Are you sure?
Mm-hmm. Pretty sure. I've never seen it.
Okay. All right.
It's funny when we talk
about to teach. So I just want to make sure.
If you want someone on the left to roll their eyes at your Second Amendment argument, you can bring up the term natural law, where you will talk about how it is your right to defend yourself. And this comes not from the state. It's not the right that comes from the state. Comes from God. And they will roll their eyes at that argument every time until the moment they can use God to be against the Second Amendment, because you can't bring them to church. All of a sudden, all they care about is the Prince of Peace.
Yeah, I love that.
That's right.
I love that. How people were mocking religion and prayer. Mm. What kind of society?
Every time now. Well, prayer is not going to do it.
Prayer alone is
not enough. Nobody said just pray. I'm just praying now and doing nothing else. I'm not going to lift another finger. I'm not going to think about another thing. I'm just praying, and then I'm just going to sit here. Nobody's saying that. I mean, prayer always comes with your action, too. You act as if everything depends on you. You pray as if everything depends on the Lord. It's a simple concept. Really simple.
After all that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
That's when he comes in. After all that you can do. You know what? I loaded my gun. I cleaned it. I put a bullet in the chamber. Mm-hmm. I brought it to church. I saw him walk in. I saw him say, "You're all going to," and that's when I fired and put a bullet in his head. Lord, you take it from here.
Yeah.
I mean, look, the bottom line, though, is there are a lot of people who do take every step they can to prepare, and they do everything they can that's right, and there's no reason you'd think anything bad would happen to them. And sometimes it does anyway. Mm-hmm. Praying for things is not a hall pass to avoid all tragedy. That is not what it
is.
No,
right.
Bad things happen to good people. We ran out of time. I wanted to ask the governor, you know, here's our governor of the state of Texas. If there's anyone who can understand bad things happen to good people, it's him. Here's this kid who is athletic. He's in really great shape. He's out for a jog. A tree falls
on
hits him. Hits him. Snaps his back. He's in a wheelchair the rest of his life. Our governor is in a wheelchair, in case you don't know, if you're not from Texas. You'd never know it. It's never stopped him, never slowed him down. Mm-hmm. Bad things happen to good people. It's what do you do with that?
And bad things happen to people who exercise. That's another thing we should I think,
well,
make
that's,
sure
that's
everyone knows.
That is the thing that I got out. No, don't jog.
Clearly, we all believe that principle.
Yes,
clearly. That's true. Thanks a lot, Pat.
Pat Gray Unleashed coming up on the Blaze Radio and TV networks. Did you know you could subscribe to the Blaze TV?
I did not.
Yeah, at
theblaze.com/TV.
You can
I just
watch,
type that in?
Yeah.
www.theblaze.com/TV.
Huh. You can get this wonderful program you're listening to now. Also, Doc Thompson in the morning, Pat Gray. You've got, of course, also the Glenn Beck television program.
Starting at 5 o'clock.
It's going to be a good one.
5 o'clock tonight. It's going to be a really good one. We are taking all of the arguments that you're going to hear in the next few days from friends or, you know, from acquaintances, from coworkers, all the things you hear from media and the left. And we're going to show you how to argue it all about gun control. And it isn't about gun safety. Make no mistake. It's about gun control. Who controls them? Tonight, 5 o'clock. You don't want to miss it. Number of Americans preparing for emergencies have soared recently, and it's a good thing. You know, Stu and I were talking about this, and he said, you know, the problem is with all of these stories is, the news cycle's going to bury this in a few days.
Yeah, it comes so fast. So fast. I mean, we were talking about the Vegas shooting, which was only a few weeks ago, right?
Maybe 4 weeks?
Yeah, maybe 4 or 5, something like that. It has not been that long. Seems like it was a really long time ago, and it's not, you know, it's not just, you know, people would on the left would say, or people who are anti-gun would say, oh, well, that's because there's so many mass shootings. It's not even just that.
No, we had terrorists in New York.
Yeah, we had a terrorist attack. You know, I mean, remember when the world stopped for every, I mean, remember the anthrax attacks? What a huge world that was. And I don't think 8 people died in that. It's been a while since I went back on that, but this is a bigger attack, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Right? A couple people died in
Do you remember Columbine?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Certainly Columbine.
Columbine,
yeah.
Stopped the entire world.
Yeah.
Stopped the world. There were people that I talked to last night. They were like, there was a shooting? There was a shooting? I saw the shooting pop up on the screen, and I looked to make sure. I had asked my son, what's the date today? Did this happen yesterday or this happened today? I mean, these things, it's just happening faster and faster and faster. And it reminds me of, you know, the birth pangs grow closer and closer. These are the birth pangs of the things to come. As these birth pangs get closer and closer, that usually says that there's an event after they get closer and closer. Something happens, and we're giving birth to something, and I'm not sure I want to see that baby. My Patriot Supply will help you prepare for emergencies right now while it's still stable in your life. Start right now with their 102-serving food kit for only $99. Call 800-200-7163. Order the kit or go online to preparewithglenn.com. It's going to be shipped free to your home. It includes breakfast, lunch, and dinners. Last 25 years. When there is a crisis and it strikes you or your family, you're going to be glad you acted today. 800-200-7163 or preparewithglenn.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
We want to help support this tiny town in Texas. I think we have to look at the death toll. It's 26 now, but we understand that there was a pregnant woman that was shot and killed. Is the baby the 26th, or is it actually 27 lives that has been taken? And they've just adjusted this. Earlier today, we heard that the youngest was 5. We now know that the youngest was 18 months old. How do you shoot an 18-month-old baby? We want to help this town out in any way that we can. You know, any way to even pay for the cost of the funerals or whatever we can do. If you would like to be involved in that relief, please go to mercury1.org and click on the front page slider about the Texas shooting. It's mercury1.org. And let's gather together around the country and help them. Let them know that we are praying for them, and where our actions are also showing that we're behind them.
We mentioned this only briefly because of the news today, but isn't it a big story that a U.S. senator was assaulted on his own property?
Huge.
And so the first story comes out, and this is a weird...
I agree
with you.
There's
something weird about this. I don't know what it is.
At first, it was just like it was a little event, and he was fine and only had a couple of scratches.
Yeah, he said he was fine. Now we're hearing that Rand Paul, if you don't know, was out mowing his lawn and was attacked by his neighbor, apparently. And now Rand Paul has 5 broken ribs and bruised lungs. It was apparently a pretty major attack. He may be out from the Senate for a while.
And it looks like it was politically motivated.
Yeah, The Blaze has a story. The FBI has confirmed the motive behind the assault on Rand Paul. And they say that the FBI has launched an investigation. They believe the attack, which occurred Friday afternoon, was politically motivated. So we have a situation where Christians are being murdered at church. Separately, a political attack against a sitting U.S. senator, in which he's maybe out for weeks, months in recovery. He is a registered Democrat whose Facebook page was riddled with posts voicing his opposition to Donald Trump and the GOP.
He was a big Occupy Democrat.
Yeah. He was eventually, I guess, $5,000 bond. He was charged with 4th-degree assault, and he has since been released. I mean,
released?
Yeah. I mean, that's a big-time crime. This is not something... Now, back in the day, senators used to beat each other up on the floor of the Senate. No longer the case, thankfully. I think that's a good development for the country. But the fact that this happened and then it was reported as such a minor incident and it has been escalated so much now, and now it is politically, it seemed like they first told us about it in this way of like, oh, it was a neighborly conflict. Like these guys had a rivalry or something in the neighborhood. Now it's politically associated. There's something very strange going on with the story.
There's something wrong with that story. There's also something very wrong with the story coming out of Saudi Arabia. We had the prime minister of Lebanon fly to Riyadh, the capital of Saudi Arabia, and resign his office as prime minister of Lebanon. And he did it because he feared for his life. He said Iran and Hezbollah are controlling not only Lebanon, but the entire region. Shortly after that, the Houthi fighters, which are Iranian-based, launched a missile at the capital of Saudi Arabia. And then the Saudi Arabian crown prince, who's going to be the next king, started a purge in his country. It became all Jason Bourne in Saudi Arabia. We'll have more on that tomorrow and tonight. Everything you need to know to protect the Second Amendment tonight, 5 o'clock, only on The Blaze TV.
Glenn Beck.